This is HPR episode 2666 entitled, Slackware Post Install. It is hosted by Mirashades and is about 30 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, a quick and dirty guide to getting Slack up and running after it's installed.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello world, you're listening to Hacker Public Radio, and you probably already knew that, and I'm Mirashades, and you probably already knew that too. So today, I want to talk about what's a little bit of a homecoming for me, I guess. Before we do that though, before we get into it, I just want to say I'm not feeling 110%. I actually recorded this episode once already and didn't like it, so I'm re-recording it. But yeah, I'm a little under the weather. Excuse me. So if you hear me cough or sneeze or something, just overlook me. Recently, I was... If you listen to any of my other episodes, you'll know that I was a big fan of CrunchBang Linux, and it came at a time that was just perfect because it was a very, I don't know how to put it. It was a very hackable sort of distro. Like, there was a lot of effort put into making sure that everything was controlled with text files and had relatively sane defaults. It ran on OpenBox with Conky Intent 2, and it was very, very nice. I very much was taken with CrunchBang. And then the, I don't know what you want to call him, the project leader or whatever, he ended the project, and the community decided to continue it as Bunsen Labs. And Bunsen Labs is great. I tried to use it for a while. There's nothing wrong with it. I know that sounds like I'm going to start with a big list of things that were wrong with it, but I'm not. My problems with Bunsen Labs actually have absolutely nothing to do with Bunsen Labs. It's the Debian base that it's built on top of that I don't care for. I've actually never been much of a Debian guy. I started looking around. I'm not a fan of systemd, and so, you know, we used to say Linux was all about choice, but, you know, if you choose not to do systemd, you're choosing to go from a choice of about 400 distros down to about 4 distros. That's not entirely accurate, but it's pretty close. yeah, there's not many distros out there that are non-systemd. And also, if you choose to not go the systemd route, you're also choosing to drop GNOME 3, is it? There's a lot of systemd dependencies, I think. I don't know. I don't really keep up with GNOME that much anymore. I wasn't really taken by GNOME 3 anyway, or really even the GTK 3 look of the apps. So that was one of the things that was cool about CrunchBang and Bunsen Labs, was that I could keep a lot of my apps on GTK2 and they looked pretty nice. At least I think. I kind of like the way GTK2 looks. I know it looks a little dated, but it still looks cool. You can get a pretty good look out of them. Anyway, So moving away from that and trying to find something else was hard. I kind of looked around, and I couldn't find anything that I really liked that really just made me happy. There are some other distros out there that are sort of, I don't want to say derived from, but more like inspired by Crunch Bang. And I'm aware of those. There's Crunch Bang Plus Plus. There is Arch Labs. And the guy who did Arch Labs, I'm pretty sure, I think his handle's Dobby or something. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your handle, dude. I'm totally sorry. He's pretty active in the Bunsen Labs forums. And I think they use a lot of his work to do... there's a community edition of Manjaro based on OpenBox that looks significantly like a lot was taken from Arch Labs. But it didn't do it for me either. It's one of those things that it looks great in the screenshot, but when I install it and start playing with it, I wind up breaking things way too easy, and I'm like, what's the deal here? Why is all this stuff breaking just because I do very simple things? And some of that's probably my own fault, too, because I'm not a... I'm not really an Arch guy, and I don't have anything against Arch in and of itself. Like, I... actually was super duper excited to try Arch at one point, and the then they started doing things like they were really quick to jump on systemd, of course, but they've also been one of the early distros to, and they weren't, I don't think they were the first, but they were the one of the big distros to just dump 32-bit support, which kind of irks me. I know it's old. I know a lot of 32-bit processors are old, but I still have a lot of that hardware, and I still want to use it sometimes. That may sound crazy to people, but, you know, it is what it is. I have it. It still works. I want to use it. And I don't feel like I need to justify myself for that. If I have it and I want to use it, that's my business. There. It is what it is. So I couldn't find anything that made me happy. I looked around, and so what I wound up actually doing is going back to Slackware. So I was actually a Slackware user for many years. I was happily a Slackware user for many years. The only reason why I wound up leaving Slackware initially was I went to college and I was working. I was going to college full-time and working full-time, and I just did not have time to do all the wonderful things that you need to do to get Slackware up and going, which really isn't that bad. I think more of that was just in my head than anything, maybe. But I did want something that was essentially Crunch Bang. Like, when I came across Crunch Bang, I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I was looking for. And it made me very happy. And so I used it for a while. And installing software, you know, it is a little bit of a chore to do on Slackware, because it's not as simple like, okay, sudo apt get installed, whatever, and it does everything automagically for you. It's not like that on Slackware. It's not like that at all on Slackware. But that's okay. There's tools on Slackware to kind of ease the pain of that, too. So a lot of people are going to get their software from slackbuilds.org, and they're probably going to use a tool. Nowadays, it's very common to see people using SBOPKG, and I'm no different in that respect. It is kind of nice to just be able to say, okay, I want this program, whatever it is. Say it's Audacity, and you go to the Slackbuilds page. Here, I'll do this real quick so it's actually accurate. Let me go to... there we go. I knew it was in my history somewhere. We'll go to Slack Builds, and then we'll look up Audacity. And there it is, and it's listed under the audio category. And it'll tell you at the bottom, this requires LAME and WXGTK3. So, in order to install Audacity, you'll have to grab those dependencies too. So if we open those in separate tabs, you can see that LAME is, you can get that by itself, and it doesn't have any dependencies, and it doesn't look like
WXDDK3 does either. So you can just pull those down, and you can actually, with SBOPKG, you can queue those up all in one queue, and it'll just go down the line, building them and installing the packages. Anyway, the point of this episode, the reason why I wanted to do this episode wasn't so much about my personal experience going back to Slackware, which that was really cool. It was kind of a neat thing, because when I first got it up and running, I was like, man, why did I ever leave this? This is beautiful. And then I had to go and install something. I was like, oh yeah, it takes a very long time for this to build. But that's okay. That's okay. Actually, I got the time to do that now. Nothing in this world runs like a Slackware machine. Of course, you could make that argument for any distribution, whatever your favorite distribution happens to be. Every distribution has, even though people will tell you, oh, that's all the same, they're all the same, it's the same software, but they're not. Every distribution wires that stuff up a little bit differently, and every distro, whether it's Debian or Fedora or Slackware, they feel just a little bit different. Some of it is responsiveness of it, some of it is just the way the system moves, and just, I don't know, you get attuned to it over time. There's a certain bonding period, I guess you would say, a certain symbiosis that takes place when you get your system up and running. And Slackware has this very, just, it's insanely stable and fast, even if the software may not. The downside is you're not going to get, like, the bleeding edge of software, which is okay. Like, I mean, a lot of times I don't really need the bleeding edge, and I'm fine. So what I really wanted to talk about, I'm not going to go into the specifics of the Slackware installation. If you never used Slackware, or you've never installed it, maybe you've put it off because you've heard it's really hard to do, or it doesn't have a pretty graphical installer. It's not necessarily, people say it's not user friendly. I have never found Slackware particularly hard to install, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. The first time I ever installed Slackware, I wasn't much more than a noob myself, really. It wasn't particularly hard back then either. The installer isn't graphical, but as long as you followed through the steps and read what was on the screen, you were fine. Nowadays some people may not be as comfortable using a program like FDisk or CFDisk to partition their hard drive, and that's okay. I mean, some people are probably just going to boot off of something like Gparted or whatever and partition their hard drive, and that's okay too if you're more comfortable with that. And the installer will see the partitions and format them whatever you want. Unlike other distributions, though, whenever you do the Slackware installation, and everybody should, I think, at least once in their life run Slackware. You might find you like it, then you might find you hate it. I don't feel like there's a lot of middle ground there. People, you generally either love it or hate it, and that's okay too. But you should at least try it once. I'm not going to talk really about the installation process itself. What I will do is direct you to the installation guide. I guess it's the quote-unquote official installation guide. It's at docs.slackware.com/slackware install. Or I think it's, I can't remember if that's exactly it, but I'll put the link in the show notes so you can get to it. It covers the regular installation, and I'm sure there's also quite a few YouTube videos out there. I'll find one and link to it in the show notes as well. Pretty easy to install Slackware, but unlike other distributions today, like most of the time, most people are probably, you know, you install it and then you're ready to go, right? Slackware is not like that. There's some post-install stuff you got to do to have your system up and running and ready to go. So some of that is because Slackware hasn't changed a bunch of stuff over the years, and they still kind of kept to some of their old Unix heritage. I've read on places, of all the Linux distributions, Slackware is the closest to its Unix heritage. Also, a lot of things in Slackware you'll find are vanilla. They don't rewire things. They don't patch any software. It's as close to how it comes from the developer's hands as you can get. So you can kind of make the system what you want it to be. But the reason why I wanted to do this is because, you know, it wasn't very difficult for me, even after all these years, to get Slackware installed and up and running. I kind of knew in the back of my mind, you know, even though it's been a few years since I'd been on Slackware, what I needed to do to be up and running. And there is actually on the Slackware docs page, docs.slackware.com/slackwarebeginners_guide. That walks you through some of the post-install process. I'll link to that too. But whenever I looked at it, some of the stuff seemed like it was a little out of order. Specifically, like, it'll cover some of the things you need to do to get Slack PKG up and running, but it goes over that before you have your network up and running, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because if you don't have your network working, Slack PKG isn't going to do you any good. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. But I just, yeah, I want to briefly go over this. I'm not going to go in super, super in-depth, but I figure I can share with you usually the steps that I usually follow after I install Slackware to get the system up and running, so that this, you know, this post-install guide that they have in the docs may not be so daunting for you if you decide to do this. So, once you get the system installed, the guide will tell you the first thing you can do is create a user account. And yeah, I think I might have did that first as well. I didn't actually log into the account right away, because there's still a lot of stuff you need to do, and it's just easier to do it as root. But I think I did go ahead and add my user account. So there's two ways to do this in Slackware. So there's a command called add user, and there's another command called user add. So I know that is easy to get mixed up. Add user is essentially a interactive script that will ask you questions about the new account and set it up for you. Kind of walks you through it a little bit. The other method is to use the user add command, which the... just to give you an idea, the example they have on the page is like user add -m -g users -capital G wheel floppy audio video CD ROM plug dev power net dev LP scanner -s/bin/bash slacker. So you can see it's a very long command, but you can just run that one command and you're done. Add user takes a little longer. But once you've done that, you can log into the account. You can log out as root. I don't do that right away, like I said, because there's some other stuff you want to do. It's easier to do as root. The next thing it talks about is make Slackware speak your language. This is not something I might be wrong, but I know the installer is in English, and I think I cannot remember now if the installer gives you the option to change the language when you install it. I don't remember. Anyway, it's not something I usually have to deal with, so I basically skip this section, but you might want to read it. It's, I think actually in the guide, it links you over to another document about, localization in Slackware. So I'm going to move on, because, English is my native language, so that's not something I had to deal with, and I don't want to speak to something that I really don't know about. So configuring the package manager, I'm going to skip that for now, because that's what I usually do. I usually go down here to configure the network. Now, if you're following along in the guide, the configure your network part is very complicated and it's very in-depth, okay? And it's probably, if you're not familiar with a lot of this kind of stuff in Linux, it's probably going to confuse you, especially if you're new to all this stuff. However... okay, I'm going to share with you a great secret of how to get your network up and running in Slackware really, really quick, okay? So essentially, and there's nothing in here that's wrong in this section about configuring your network, but most people, I feel, are just going to want to get connected to the network and start doing, and just not think about it anymore, and just start doing what they were going to do. The easiest and fastest way to do this is to as root CD into the /etc/rc.d directory, I believe it is. And isn't that where it's at? Yeah, that's it. /etc/rc.d, and then in that directory there is either rc.wicked, that's WICD, or rc.networkmanager, all one word, all lowercase. Now, what you do next is going to depend on whether or not you want to use Wicked as your network manager, or if you want to use Network Manager as your network manager. I use Network Manager, but I know a lot of people out there like Wicked. So, whichever one you want to use, you just chmod plus x, one or the other, and that will make that executable, and then that service will run whenever you boot Slackware up. I'm trying to think. Once you go graphical, I'm sorry, my brain's wandering a little bit. I'm doing two things at once. Once you go graphical in something like, I think by default Slackware uses KDE, but it ships with a few other window managers. I usually just use a window manager, and usually it's something like Fluxbox, I'll be honest with you. But I'll have to admit, like, early on when I'm getting things right now, getting back in the swing of things, KDE has made life a little bit easier for a few things. It's a very, very, very nice desktop. If you like a full-on desktop environment, it's very pretty, and it's got all the bells and whistles, and it's super nice. I really like KDE, but it's just, I'm not really a full-on desktop kind of guy. I like Window Manager because it's kind of out of the way and doesn't use a lot of resources. But whenever you go in there, you can get your network manager, whether it's Wicked or Network Manager, to connect to wireless or whatever, and then you can work on getting Wicked or your Slack PKG. So what Slack PKG is, this is a section we skipped earlier called Configure a Package Manager. The easiest thing to do is to go to /etc/slackpkg/mirrors. There's a file there. Just edit it with whatever, Nano or Vim if you're a Vim guy or gal, or whatever. But you do have to edit it as root, I believe. And then just you can look for a local mirror in that list and uncomment it, or you can do, there is a URL at the top that is an HTTP URL, and it it'll have a warning above it about not using the FTP URL, but that HTTP URL is a redirect URL, and it will try to figure out the closest mirror to where you're at and use it. Once you uncomment it out and then save that file, you'll want to run Slack PKG update GPG and then Slack PKG update. And once that's done, whenever you actually use Slack PKG, generally the order, it's posted in the in this document. It lists the order to run them: Slack PKG update, and then Slack PKG install new, and then Slack PKG upgrade all. There's also Slack PKG clean system, but you don't really need to do that unless you're moving from like one version of Slackware to another. Slack PKG, for those of you who don't know or don't use Slackware, is not designed as the type of package manager you probably think. You're not going to really install new software with it. All it does is really update the packages that Slackware ships with. So if there's been updates to some of those packages, Slack PKG will pull those down and install those. But that's really it. You can sign up. There are a couple of mailing lists that they will send out whenever there's like security updates or patches or whatever, kind of let you know that you might want to run Slack PKG because there's been some changes. And not that big of a deal. It's not that hard. Once you're at this point, you're almost in the home stretch. So the next thing you want to do, probably, this is a step that a lot of people tend to skip over because it's switching to a generic kernel, and there's probably as many arguments for as against. If you're on modern hardware, the argument is it's not, if you have gigs and gigs of RAM, if you're on like a, you just bought a new laptop and it's got 32 gigs of RAM, you're probably not going to notice the few megabytes that you save by switching to a generic kernel from the, I think it's huge.s is the default kernel. But for me, I'm a fan of efficiency, which is kind of silly sometimes when you're in the Slackware world, since you're installing a whole bunch of software out of the box, but that's okay. It's also kind of tradition too. It's part of the Slackware thing. You get off of the huge kernel and then switch to just the regular generic kernel. And I do that, and it's not terribly hard to do. Basically, there is a script in /user/share/mkinitrd called mkinitrd_command_generator.sh, and you run that script and it will barf out a command for you to run. It basically will look at the system and say, okay, this is a command you need to run to generate a new RAM drive, essentially. It's an initrd.gz image. And then once you've run that, you just need to... oh, and by the way, you need to run that as root. And then you'll need to go and edit your lilo.conf file in /etc. And there's the examples for how to do this are actually in that document too, but there's just a line that you have to change to the new initrd and point it to the root, like /dev/sda1 or whatever, the root partition, and then where the image and stuff is. And then after you save that, you have to run lilo-v to make the changes permanent, and then you can boot to the generic kernel. What you'll want to do is make sure you don't erase the lines for the default kernel until you have booted into the generic kernel and made sure that it works and that everything works the way you expected. Because if something gets borked up, you can go back to the huge.s kernel and figure out what went wrong without having to like reinstall everything. So some of the other stuff I'm not going to really cover here because it talks about configuring X if it needs to be. Most of the time, I haven't had X misfire like that in a long, long time. I think the last time I had issues with getting X configured on Slackware was a long, long time ago when I had an old Pentium 4 system with an NVIDIA graphics card, and I had to... but what was great was it was an easy thing to fix. Like, it was just... I just pulled down with wget the NVIDIA driver installer back then was like just a package that you would just run from the command line. And for whatever reason, this was just a horrible pain in the ass to do on Debian, but on Slackware, it was nothing. Like, there was because Slackware is configured by default, that was the next thing I was going to talk about. Defaults just boots up in the command line. So if you want it to boot up to a graphical login, you have to set that up. And that's covered in this document as well, but it's not something that I usually do. Essentially, all it is setting the default run level from, I think it's, off the top of my head, I think it's 3 to 4. And that sets it to do the graphical boot, and that'll start. I don't even know what display manager Slackware ships with. I'm going to assume it's KDM because they use KDE, but I don't know, to be honest. But that's it. I mean, once you've added your user, you get your network up and running, and you get Slack PKG configured, and you get your you switch to the generic kernel,
then you can get going. One other little quick thing I will say about the whole configuring X section. There is a quick little command for those of you just starting out that might make things a little easier. That you can run if you're logged in as your regular user and not root. I usually leave the default set for root to KDE, so that if you log in as root and then type start X, it'll just boot into, what do they call that, X defaults or whatever? No, that ain't right. I don't know. I'm not feeling well. But whatever. If root, you type start X and KDE comes up. But for my regular user, I'll set it to whatever, just window manager, usually Fluxbox. But there's a little command that you can type to make this easier for you. It's XWM config, all one word, and it'll let you just select from the installed window managers which one you want to be the default for your user, so you don't have to edit anything. And I say that because I know there's going to be people new to Slackware that doesn't like manually editing everything. And that might make your life a little bit easier. But yeah, that's basically it. Once you get that accomplished, you can log into your system and have fun. Start installing software, which is going to take you a while because it's you're going to be building that stuff from source, right? The Slackware way. But I will digress. Yep, this has been Mirror Shades, and you guys have fun, and I'll see you on the next one.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.